Presentation number 11, The Rise of Modernism. This presentation refers to your course book, page 79, and it mostly refers to your PowerPoint presentation to slide 368. So in this lecture, I will try to explain in a nutshell what is modernism. Modernism is a literary movement which started in between 1914. It peaked after the First World War in the 1920s. And according to some scholars, it finished in 1939 before the Second World War. But many writers were still writing in a modernist fashion until the 1965. So you will not make any mistake if you say that the movement was mostly active between the First and Second World War, but it spanned in between 1914 and 1965. It was the first literary movement that put the word modern to its title. So the modernists wanted to be modern in terms of the subject matter. They wanted to write about modern issues such as cars, fast lifestyle in the 1920s, new fashion, new inventions, but also about political issues such as the suffrage movement, meaning the liberation of women, and related topics such as new lifestyle, referring to sexual openness, referring to much more freedom for women who could visit or attend restaurants unattended, which had never happened in history before, and many other issues. So modernism tried to be modern in terms of the subject matter, but also in terms of the style of writing. And you may remember from Introduction to Literature that the modernists introduced the type of writing or the method of writing called stream of consciousness. Well, if you think about this phrase, it's very interesting, and it helps us to understand the meaning of a stream of consciousness. Stream means a river, prut, rieka. So stream means a fast flowing river, and it should indicate the fast flowing thoughts in the writer's and reader's head. And consciousness, well, modernists experimented a lot with Freudian ideas of consciousness, unconsciousness. They were very much interested in human psyche. So what they really wanted to do, the modernists wanted to write about reality, but differently or in a different way than the realists. The realists tried to grasp reality as it is. Remember Charles Dickens, he tried to record every single detail of what he saw, what he perceived, what he heard, and put it into his writings. The modernists wanted to do the same, but they wanted to record reality according to their psyche, as reality is perceived by their mind. That influences the stream of consciousness. So stream of consciousness is typical for very long sentences imitating this stream of consciousness, flow of thoughts. A very unusual syntax and punctuation, because when your thoughts flow, then you do not think much about certain heterogeneity of the text or punctuation. Stream of consciousness is also typical of a lot of psychological material. So they often use inner narrator to move the plot forward. And finally, a stream of consciousness is often very inconsistent. If you read it, you feel the author jumps from one idea to the other. And that's right, because they try to record human thoughts as they go through an individual's head. And that's why the text is very incoherent, inconsistent. There are chains of thoughts which are more like associations than a well-revised text. There were several great representatives of modernism. Some scholars believe Joseph Conrad was a proto-modernist. He was the first who started the modernist writing. But you certainly recognize names such as Virginia Woolf and James Joyce. In your course book, in page 79, there are also some other names of philosophers, inventors, and artists such as Einstein, Picasso, William James, the psychiatrist, Max Planck, and so on. So you may read this page, but if you do not remember all the names, that's fine. So now let us move to page 80, and there is a biography of Virginia Woolf and James Joyce. You can read about her biography. She was a very strong personality in the 1920s in London. I do not require all the details related to her life, but now I will mention those details which might be of key importance for our course. So Virginia Woolf was a very rich intellectual child, we could say, or youngster. She was born to a rich intellectual family. Her father was a very famous linguist and historian and philosopher. And they were a very intellectual family who were meeting a great people, great personalities of the 1920s on a regular basis. So philosophers and various inventors and writers were coming to them for a lunch or for a coffee or a tea, of course. Virginia Woolf married Leonard Woolf, who also was active in writing, and he was involved in publishing business. And they both started a publishing house called Haggard Press, which published many of her books. However, Virginia Woolf was not a happy person. She suffered from many mental diseases, including bipolar disease, depressions. She tried to commit suicide several times. Some biographers say that was because of her father, who was overly strong and influential. Some say she was skeptical because of the war, and some say it was a physiological problem. And these depressions translated to her writing. So she very much wanted to write about her personal demons, and she wanted to express everything that goes through an individual's mind. So that these are her inspirations related to this stream of consciousness. As an interesting footnote, she killed herself eventually in 1939, I think, just before the Second World War. She put two heavy stones and drowned herself in a river. And that explains how this motif of water was a kind of magnet to her. She was afraid of water all her life, and at the same time it was very magically attracting her, and at the end she died this way. She was a very active and prolific writer. In page 81 you could see many of her novels, for example The Voyage Out, which was published in 1915, Night and Day, published in 1919, and many others. She also wrote The Jacob's Room, or Mrs. Dalloway in 1925, and many others. To the Lighthouse is a very famous Freudian novel in which she finished in 1927, and perhaps her most experimental is Orlando, which she finished in 1929. In your course, we are to read two of her short stories, and you may find parts of these short stories in your page 160. The first short story is called Kew Gardens, and that was finished in 1919. And in many ways, this could be viewed as the first modernist short story ever written. Of course, experts differ in their opinions, but if you read the parts of this short story, it's very, very, very evident. So what should we know about this short story? First of all, Kew Gardens are real gardens which you can visit in London. A picture is there in page 164. And it's a beautiful garden with many conservatories, many flower beds, and beautiful, beautiful places. And Virginia Woolf wanted to describe this garden. And of course, had she been a realist, she would have described it in a realistic fashion. She would have probably said how many flower beds there are, how do the flowers look like, how do the people look like that came to see these flowers. But she was a modernist and she wanted to write in a modern fashion. So what she did, she in page 165, you can see a beautiful painting by Monet, a French painter, I think, which is written in the fashion called Impressionism. So Impressionists wanted to grasp the impression, the feeling which you feel when you observe something. So they wanted to, through their paintings, they wanted to put forward emotions. Beauty, exhilaration, adoration, some shocking feelings, puzzled feelings, and so on. And that is exactly what Virginia Woolf wanted to do by her writing. So she was describing Kew Gardens in a way as if she was painting an impressionistic painting. So instead of using kind of common syntax and choice of words, she used frequent repetitions. In page 160, you can see the first 15 lines where she describes the flower beds, and you can see there are many repetitions as if she was singing a song, and this was a refrain. And she repeatedly uses phrases that were red, blue, and yellow petals, red, blue, and yellow flowers to intensify the impression she wanted to increase in the reader. So this extract is full of flowers. You can see some 10 flowers there, red, blue, yellow, silver, green, blue, black, and many others. There are also many textures, so when you read it, you almost see how the flowers looked like, what was the texture of their petals, of their leaves, of their stems, and many other parts of the flower. And she also pays great attention to shapes, so you know very detailedly how these flowers looked like. And then at the very end of the paragraphs, the reader learns that we are in Kew Gardens in July. And that is the second interesting thing. So, as you clearly see, time and place, the setting, is not important for her. So she makes it a very marginal remark that these Kew Gardens were visited in July, and then you have to read very closely In line 76 in your page 162, one of the characters mentions heavens was known to the ancients as Thessaly, William, and now with this war. So you have to really, it's very easy to overlook this, that the short story is set during the war. And of course, it's the First World War because she didn't live through the Second World War. So the question here is, why did she make this very important information so marginal? Well, the point is she didn't want to make an issue of the war. It was secondary to her. The first thing that matters in this short story is the beauty of the garden. And that could also be the theme of the short story. Enjoy the beauty regardless to the war, regardless to the circumstances, enjoy the beauty. Okay, and then the third thing that we should perhaps know about the short story is that then she lets the reader see some five or six groups of people who visit the gardens, and they walk through the garden. There is a young man who remembers how he visited the garden long time ago with some other girl. There are two men. One of them is old and somehow senile. He seems to have lost his memory. There are two women who only talk about sugar in line 106. And then there is a young couple and a young boy who is very lucky that it's Friday in line 131, because then he doesn't have to pay more, and so on and so on. So what does Virginia Woolf do with this set of people who are totally unconnected? They have nothing in common. They really are completely unrelated, but she just wants us to see all these people who come to these beautiful gardens and walk through it, immersed in their silly, daily, common, trivial problems. And they do not see the beauty of the garden. So they only talk about groceries and money and some old time memories, but they do not see and do not really perceive the beauty. And my last remark here is if you read the last paragraph in page 164, you may feel that you do not understand anything, because she really kind of lost contact with a kind of realistic narrative, realistic text. The text is completely fragmented and decomposed into impressions, into this stream of consciousness, where she describes the beauty of the garden together with the beauty of life as such. And that's it. That's the end of the story. So what we should understand from this short story is really this imperative, enjoy the beauty. And she wanted the reader to feel, to physically perceive the beauty from her writings. That certainly is extremely experimental. And you may see the same experiment in her second short story, The Mark on the Wall, which you find in your page 165. And again, the plot is very tiny. Somebody is sitting in an armchair observing a mark on the wall. Škvrnu na stěně. They translated it to Slovak as škvrna na stěně. Nothing much happens there. So this person, a woman, is sitting in an armchair, and the mark on the wall brings her to all kinds of free associations. It reminds her of a snail, of Shakespeare, of many, many things. And she doesn't really feel like going there and checking what this mark is. She likes this mental exercise of thinking what the mark on the wall might be. Again, the short story is written in a stream of consciousness fashion, and it explores the methods of modernism. The second modernist writer mentioned in your book is James Joyce. Again, you can Google his biography and read about his life. He was a great cosmopolitan personality. He was Irish, but he traveled a lot in Europe. He spent a lot of time in Switzerland and many other countries. What we should know about him is that he had a very serious medical condition related to his sight. So he couldn't see very well. He was almost blind. So he often concentrated on acoustic qualities of text. And many of his words have these onomatopoeic qualities. And his daughter was suffering from many mental problems. So he was very well aware of psychology, various mental treatments, treating of schizophrenia and many other psychological information, so which he put into his writings. What made him famous were two things or two novels. The first one is basically a collection of short stories called The Dubliners. It consists of some two dozens of short stories related to the Dubliners, people who live in Dublin, and to their daily lives. What you see in your course book in page 170 is a short story called Evelyn, which he finished in 1914. And very similarly to Virginia Woolf, James Joyce is exploring life of a young woman, Evelyn, whose mother died, and she's now taking care of her father, who drinks and is quite mean to her, and several younger brothers. And at the same time, she's dating Frank, a young, handsome man who suggested to immigrate out of Ireland and go to Buenos Aires. And now she's in this dilemma, she's facing this dilemma to stay and bear the responsibility and bury her life basically, or to leave Ireland for insecure but perhaps better life with the love of her life. And as you will see when you read the short story, she decides not to go. She decides to stay in Ireland. And it's really open-ended, so it's up to the reader to decide why did she decide so. But I just want to draw your attention to two things which are very interesting in the short story. The first one, if you read page 170, you may see the word dust several times mentioned. In line 2, for example, in her nostrils was the odor of dusty cretonne. And then she uses the word several more times in line 19 and several more times. So the dust symbolizes here dusty Ireland. Ireland as a place which is stagnating, which is old-fashioned, which needs change, needs to be improved. So the short story is very symbolic. It's a modernist short story which occasionally uses a stream of consciousness, but it's also very symbolic. So the dust symbolizes old-fashioned Ireland, which needs a change. And then let me draw your attention to page 172, where Evelyn is in between the decision whether to go or not. And if you read the text, the whole text is quite realistic. There are not many metaphors used or personifications. There are some symbols, but generally you can follow the storyline. Now, that changes in line 116 until the end of the story. You can see that suddenly Joyce uses a lot of metaphors, right? For example, in line 116 or 17, a bell clanged upon her heart. A bell clanged is a beautiful metaphor, right? So she felt frenzy and nervousness for coming. And then in line 21, all the seas of the world tumbled about her heart. He was drawing her into them. He would drown her. So again, we have beautiful metaphors here. And finally, in line 124, amid the seas, she sent the cry of anguish. So you see that now the text referring to Evelyn is filled with metaphors, beautiful metaphors, which could indicate that Evelyn in her mind is a very creative, imaginative person, and she doesn't really hope or desire for a life, for a pragmatic or a very down-to-earth life with Frank. So Evelyn again could symbolize Ireland as a country where people are very creative, imaginative, and that is also James Joyce's legacy. He, by this short story, he doesn't want all the Irish to emigrate and go out and move out of Ireland. He wants them to stay because they are very valuable for their country, to stay and perhaps change the country. So again, just like Virginia Woolf in her two short stories, he very indirectly puts forward the message to the reader. And he wants the reader to be much more active than writers wanted ever before. He wants the reader to think, to speculate what could be the meaning of the words, and to draw their own individual conclusions. So that's one more legacy of postmodernism. It allows much more freedom of the reader than any literary movement before. Okay, that is the end of the lecture. If some part was not understood, then feel free to write me an email.